P.S. I Love Hoffman is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcast Network. For all things Cage Club related, head on over to cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me.
So, Kyle, we're live today again.
Yeah. This is... Yeah!
You're going to hear a lot of walk-in accents today. I don't think we can help it.
John, my boy! That's what he's...
Yeah.
John, yeah. My boy!
Who's... Yeah.
Touch...
We're going to play a little touch.
The squib!
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, man.
Walk-in.
So, yes, we're doing a late quartet today, so Christopher Walken, he's... I guess just tune in. Just tune in and listen to us.
He's an instrument.
He is an instrument himself. Imagine playing a walk-in phone or something. Like, oh, wow.
He's like an accordion.
He's like an accordion of a man. An Oscar-winning accordion.
The best.
Deer Hunter. Is that... Was he best
That's
actor?
A funny movie.
Hilarious.
That's supporting.
It's supporting, okay. Yeah, because who's the lead, I guess, in Deer
Hunter? De Niro.
Hunter?
It's all about De Niro. He's on the mountain. He's shooting
True,
a deer.
Yeah.
He's the deer hunter.
He's the deer hunter. You're right. That's a movie with... well, you don't have to get into the deer hunter.
Yeah, let's get into this Facebook
yes,
Live.
Yes, let's do it live. Let's do it.
Let's do it live.
Woo!
Iggy Pop! Amen! Let it rock!
I'm a fucking idiot.
Red meat, we crave sustenance.
I'm an artist.
Hello, my name is Truman Capote.
Why don't you have some fun?
Fun!
Tommy.
It's a painting.
Whoever she is, I'm gonna find her and I'm gonna hurt her.
I've spent the past 3 years learning Finnish!
I'm always home, I'm uncool.
This is a process of dehypnotization.
Shut up!
Cool, yeah. Now, are you ready to do this?
Guess who's back?
I'm excited.
Back again.
I'm pumped.
You're pumped? Yeah.
You ready to start?
I am.
Oh, yes. Let's get in position.
Yeah.
Even though we're very tight right now, yeah. Your cello?
No, yeah.
Of the quartet, what would you be?
I would love to play piano. A piano?
You could like to be piano.
I love to play piano.
So what did you mean?
Violin. Yeah, no.
I could. You're the closest to a classically trained musician between the two of us.
Sure. Yeah.
As you were a drum major.
I was in the wind symphony and I played percussion. I played timpani, which is a very orchestral.
True. The timpani. Yes. That's like the. What's a timpani?
Those are the big. It's like usually four drums. And it's like. They're copper looking on the outside.
I know nothing about
you know, all that good stuff.
So let's begin, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Hey, Hoff fans, welcome to this very special edition of the P.S. I Love Hoffman podcast, our love letter to the remarkable career of the late, great Philip Seymour Hoffman. I'm Brian Rodriguez in the flesh.
I'm Kyle Reinfried.
Also in the flesh.
In the flesh as well.
In live and in living color.
And in a hat.
We're always home, we're always uncool, and we're always ready to talk great movies. And Kyle, we're literally in your home today.
Yes, and we're late. We apologize,
yes.
But it's a late quartet.
We did that on purpose. Not really.
Comedians.
But we are a little late, and if you're listening to this, then you're not watching this, because we are on Facebook Live today.
Is that how that works?
Be listening and watching, but I mean if you're just listening, you're not watching.
Why have the TV and the speaker going at the same time? I like to party.
That is not from this film.
No, that's from Talladega Nights. A very similar film.
Very similar film. No. Very similar. So we're talking about A Late Quartet today.
A Late Quartet. This is one of the few movies of this podcast I had not seen until, you know.
Oh, okay. That's always one of my first questions. So I had not seen this either. This is a movie
Virgins,
that...
both of us.
Okay. This is a movie, though, that I remember it coming out,
mm-hmm.
and I remember being excited to see it, because I'm like, wow, this is good. This is Philip Seymour Hoffman, and it looks like he's going to be in a good, good film.
Yeah.
And by the time, like, I guess I was ready to see it or whatever, it didn't go opening night, it was out of theaters.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, okay, it only made like $1 million-something, so.
Yeah.
And it looks, which is, I guess it was a flop, I don't know, but.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely, that falls into like flop territory.
But it was also like indie style, so it might, like maybe they weren't going for the money.
It didn't look like an indie film though. Or
but no, but it had a pretty low budget. I forgot what.
Yeah,
was.
Yeah. Well, it's a first. It's kind of like a first. He's a first time. This is like the only thing this guy really directed.
Yeah,
it was like a documentary.
Now and since, it's very weird.
Yaron Zilberman.
Yaron Zimmerman. I know he is an Israeli director.
Oh, Israeli. I'm sorry. I think it's Zohan or Munich.
Very good to stereotype people through Adam Sandler tropes. Regardless. He does a bang-up job. We were talking about before this.
Yeah.
How it was weird that this is nominated for, like, zero awards. Not even, like, critical top 10 lists.
Christopher Walken should have been nominated Best Supporting Actor.
Yeah, 100%. Look, Hoffman's amazing in this, too.
Yes, he's amazing. Catherine Keener's amazing. Even this other actor, Mark Ivanier.
Yeah, Mark Ivanier.
And I love, it's one of the greatest names of all time, but I don't know if I say it correctly, but Imogen Poots.
Imogen Poots.
Poots.
Yeah, she does.
That's
great,
a great
too.
Name, and she's also I love her. She was on a really good show. It was called Roadies. It was produced by Cameron Crowe.
Oh, I'd never seen it.
Yeah, it was on Showtime. One season canceled.
Cameron Crowe, who directed
Almost Famous, which was the last one we did Facebook Live.
Yes, we've done one previous Facebook Live, and we were in Chicago.
Chi-town. We're in Ho-Town. Hoboken. Broboken.
Hoboken, New Jersey,
town.
Just yeah. Outside Manhattan.
Yes.
Where this film largely takes place.
This
exclusive.
Oh, I thought you were saying it takes place largely outside of Manhattan. No, it takes.
No.
Place
it
Manhattan.
Takes place in Manhattan.
In Central
yes.
Park
in the Upper West Side. As someone who spends in my day job, I spend a lot of time in the Upper West Side. I work in the Upper West Side.
Yes.
Great locations. It's always good to see our guy Philip Seymour Hoffman in New York.
Yeah.
Doing his thing.
Yeah.
So this is obviously a later Hoffman.
Well, Hunger Games takes place.
Yes. This is obviously a later Hoffman film.
Yes.
And we were a little curious, like you said, you hadn't seen this one.
Is this his last New York movie?
I don't know, because I haven't seen them all.
Yeah, I think it is. I
think New York is underwater in the Hunger Games,
yes. So. He's got, like, a Philly movie coming up, and Most Wanted Man is, like, abroad in Germany and stuff.
The whole thing's in Germany?
As I recall, but I mean,
okay.
Maybe.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll see. Anyway.
Wow, so this could be Philip Seymour Hoffman's last New York film.
Yeah, that's sad.
So before we dive into this, and I definitely want, like, I can't wait to discuss this film. Kyle, why don't you tell us what this film's about in your classic way, and I'll just stare at you.
Excuse
poetically.
Me for looking down at my notes.
I think people will forgive you.
The Fugue is a string quartet that is celebrating their 25th year performing together. When Peter... The cellist or cellist? Cellist? Cellist?
It's cellist.
Cellist, but it's spelled cellist.
It's spelled cellist
yeah.
with an S?
No, but like, there's no, you know.
But that's how you spell cello as well.
Cello. Anyway, and
how
oldest
did you
member.
Think they spelled cello?
No, for, yeah.
Weren't you in a band? Didn't you lead a band?
That didn't have a cello in it. That was a marching band.
Ah, okay.
And oldest member, he finds out that he has early signs of Parkinson's. He decides he will perform once more, then retire. This isn't the only out-of-tune situation.
Oh, wow.
Sorry to make light on Parkinson's, I guess. Robert and Jules' marriage is in danger of ending, and Daniel is falling in love with Robert and Jules' daughter, Alexandra. So
that's fair.
You got Peter; he's the cellist, and
or the cellist,
other cellist,
as you put it.
I'm sorry, Mr. Pacificer. I was in high school, though. It's okay.
Good inside jokes are great for podcasts.
Yes. And then we've got Robert; that's our main man, PSH, and he is second violin. And then we've got Jules or Juliet, his wife, played by Catherine Keener, and she is playing the viola. And then you've got Daniel, who is first violin and was like a stud at Juilliard, and asked the teacher, Peter Mitchell, again played by the just incredible. Walken's one of those actors. You got your De Niro's, you got your Pacino's that are, you know, then Walken that is just like playing the caricatures of themselves
yeah.
in later years.
Yeah, but. Exactly. Like, he can still bring it when he wants.
Yeah.
He does what he wants. I was going to ask you to do your walk-in in a few, but he does, like, he takes the roles he wants, but when he... This is a good reminder that he still has dramatic chops. I feel like younger people,
I mean,
from,
you know,
like, Fatboy Slim on,
yeah,
like, know him for like comedy stuff.
Yeah. Which he's awesome.
Which he is awesome. He is awesome.
I love it's. I mean, it's a silly movie, Joe Dirt. I love when he's like, you talk to my man all wrong. You talk to him like that again. Stab you in the face with a sign, Ryan. Like,
or just... Wedding Crashers, even. And he's not like the most hilarious guy in the movie.
What is still... What's it? Blank, my boy. What is it? What is it?
Sack, my boy.
Sack.
I'm going to play a little touch.
Go out of the sailor. Seaman.
So many other whatever, but yeah, he's known even like it was on TV today, that movie Balls of Fury.
Oh, Balls of Fury. Movie. Yeah, he's like the this is you know, small role. Annie Hall, Deer Hunter.
Well, yeah, he won an Oscar for Deer Hunter. Yeah. So this is the first time. This is the first time Hoffman and Walken are together, and the only time, unfortunately, they had performed in a play together. I read.
Oh.
So they did know each other, and he said he was really looking forward to working with Philip Seymour Hoffman, and they're happy they got the chance.
Yeah, I read a great thing by Catherine Keener saying that she was always like all of them, meaning, I guess, Mark Ivner, herself, and Philip Seymour Hoffman, that they just always wanted to make Christopher Walken, not that he was mean, but they just always wanted to make him happy. Because like just to because he's just a legend. They're working with a legend. This is like him going back to Flawless, working with De Niro, and then Streep with Doubt. This is like,
but and it's funny. It's almost meta in a way, right? Because he is the older one in the quartet.
Yes,
and he's also the older one of this
of their craft of their talent. Their
and they're like almost everything they do is looking up to him. So
yeah, they do.
So
not.
So it's funny that way. I read another interesting thing about Christopher Walken on this film. He said he loved doing it because he could walk to work. Apparently, I mean, he must live in the Upper West Side.
He's always walking.
Wow! I fed you that one.
Alley-oop. Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
Okay. Wow. So these, like, I'm doing hand signals, and I'm realizing it's not going to translate to our podcast audience.
Oh, no, yeah, there's also, we're doing Facebook Live, but yeah, you guys, you know, there's going to be more people probably.
on the podcast. Yeah. So, yes, I was doing some hand signals for just feel me there.
Go okay? on our Facebook and.
And then watch the video after you listen to the podcast so that we get double clicks.
Yes.
Regardless, he told a story that he was picked up one day, brought to set, forgot his script, walked back home, got the script, came back to set, and nobody noticed. You know, and he said it was like one of the greatest things ever, which is...
Did I ever tell you my Walken production story?
No, please.
So it was one of the earliest gigs I did, and we were in... I always mix up the two. Washington Square has the fountain, correct?
As opposed like to what's the other?
I always think Union Square, Washington Square. Yeah, Washington Square has like the fountain.
Yeah, the arch.
Yeah, I know the arch, but yeah.
Okay.
So it was Washington Square, and it was like summertime, warm out. I think it was a commercial for a watch. I know he's in a nice suit.
A watch.
It doesn't. Yeah, watch.
Whoa, what time is it?
That is. We have to talk. Like, I mean, you're a man. You love the Mets. You love Queens. This is a Queens guy. You know?
Yeah, but he's also, like I read, he also like spent most of his formative years in the Upper West Side.
Ah, okay.
So it works well for this film.
Yes. But anyway, so we're on lunch, and in this commercial, he's supposed to be like, you know, I mean, that's a very shallow fountain kind of area, and he's supposed to be in the fountain, and he gets in it at one point, and so we're on lunch, he's already done that, like that part of it, and then he's just kind of walking around in the fountain, and then like we're just kind of like, and he looks like he's like practicing his lines or just whatever. He's Christopher Walken. He can do whatever he wants. And then he walks past us, and we're all trying to like not paying attention, but it's Christopher Walken. And we kind of like look past us, like look at him like as he passes, and he kind of stops and then turns back around. Oh, I forgot the fuck. I fucked up. But so when he was in the fountain, he gets down in the water and he's keeping just like his eyes above the water. And we're like, what? What is like? What is he?
And you're not shooting?
No, we're not shooting. We're on lunch.
Okay.
And what does he do? Like, and again, in the commercial, he is supposed to get in the water, but this is we're on lunch. And then he gets out. He comes past us, and then he stops, turns, and he looks at us. He goes, "For lunch, I was an alligator."
What? I believe it, though. I believe because he seems like he's such a fun guy.
I'm like turning to Dom DeLuise. But, like, my head hurts from the laughing. For lunch, I was an alligator.
I believe it, though. I believe it.
Sorry, people.
He's...
For lunch.
He's a very, like, awesome guy. Like,
Oh my god, he's definitely like, I would like talk about like a dream like dinner guest or something like that. Like, just run into like just having
dinner,
want
to be his friend.
Sharing a nice Merlot with him.
I love Merlot.
I love Merlot.
Cabernet, not a fan, but you know,
like, what's the line sideways? Like, what was he gonna leave after? If they serve a, if
it's Merlot, yeah, it is Merlot. He hates Merlot. Sideways, another movie we love. So this film, okay. So speaking of Sideways, you know how a lot of people, I feel like a lot of people are turned off on about Sideways because they're afraid it's gonna be a pretentious film about wine, but it's really not.
No, it's it's Alexander Payne, amazing.
I feel like this film is similar. I think a lot of people might be turned off. If you haven't seen it, which I'm guessing you haven't because it doesn't seem like a lot of people have. If you feel like that you're not going
to
be...
Yeah, you don't go to the... You're not in the world of...
The highbrow symphony crowd.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly. Like, symphony, like the, opera, ballet, just anything like of that nature. You don't have to be...
No.
I mean, I do enjoy, like, it's not like if you look at my iTunes, I do not have like a list of classical music. I'm not trying to solve that, but...
Baroque music, yes.
Yeah.
But classical.
If it ain't Baroque, don't fix it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Baroque.
I'm sorry. But, yeah, like, but this is just a great, it's a great movie that, I mean, I was very happy to hear, like, a lot of the music at the end. We kind of hear, like, the same, like, the beginning of this Beethoven.
But ultimately, it's just like a, not a love story, but like a melodramatic story of relationships.
It's a story of relationships, and it's a story of, especially Christopher Walken's story, it's just like acceptance and moving on, really. Like, I mean, there's even that the little girl is reading something in the subway. Remember, like, in the...
The poem, yeah.
Yeah, the poem. And I haven't seen a new movie in a while that I absolutely, like, adored, and I adore this movie.
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed this film. It's, how can I put it? Philip Seymour Hoffman is amazing in this role. This is a great role for him.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, so what do we always say about him, right? He brings vulnerability to the screen.
Yes.
And it makes you feel so vulnerable. Almost five characters here are vulnerable for different reasons.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not even counting Pilar, the other woman, because we don't really get much into her.
No.
But the quartet and the daughter,
yes.
They're all, like, sharing this level of, like, vulnerability. And it's amazing, because, yeah, they're these highbrow musicians, and in that crowd, they seem like almost rock stars. Like, I guess that's a bad, you know, thing to call. Isn't it funny, the last movie we did live was also a music film?
Oh, yeah. Well, this fits, I guess this is this part radio. And
his music trilogy?
Yeah. Trying to think if there's another.
There could have been. We'll check.
We will check.
But you know what I'm saying? Like this is a good Hoffman role, good Hoffman film.
Yeah, I there's been a lot of movies in like the later years. I mean, just throughout his career, but it's just like we've really enjoyed all of his performances. Yes, we are fans of his, but I think we would admit, you know, when it's just like he wasn't good in that. And sure, I mean, he's got those small performances in Strangers with Candy and stuff like that. Whatever.
Really.
Like, it's not like he made that or whatever. But this was a movie, again, that he brought it, and then it's a fantastic movie, and I'm really sad that I get, like, that this director hasn't, like, done anything else.
I
hope he wasn't, like, discouraged or something. I hope maybe he's just very... Maybe he's, I don't know.
So 77% by critics on Rotten Tomatoes, which is a really good score.
Yeah.
I think it should be a little bit higher, but it's a really good score.
Mm-hmm.
71% by audience.
That's for a movie that, well, I guess it doesn't matter. I mean, a lot of people didn't see it, but the people that saw it, I guess, really liked it.
Yeah, so, isn't that a good thing? Isn't that what you want in a film?
Yeah, no, it was just, yeah.
So a couple of interesting facts before we kind of dive into the relationship and some scenes. They obviously weren't playing their music.
Mm-hmm.
Because I mean, you can't just teach a guy in 6 months to be a master at their craft.
Yeah.
However, they did learn how to, like, rudimentary play, so that when they were doing the motions, they're, like, pretty accurate. Each one of them had a coach in their particular...
Ooh.
And they said Hoffman took to it the most. And I was reading an interview with him and Walken, and That's apparently awesome. he can't necessarily play, but he could... I'm guessing, like, from the interview, he could have played it at, like, a small level.
Okay.
Which,
That's awesome.
I think it's really cool, yeah.
I was never good at instruments, like, with, like, using, like, fingers.
And you were a drum major.
But what?
You need fingers to drum.
No, it's more like, I guess, to be a really good drummer, hands. You have to, like...
But you don't even need two hands, Def Leppard, right?
Yeah, exactly. You don't need two hands, yeah. Were you happy that, Wallace Shawn?
Yes, Wallace Shawn.
I did write two different... Okay, yeah, Wallace Shawn is the... right?
With the voice, yeah.
Yeah. Wallace, yeah.
He does a lot of vocal work. He does a lot.
I don't know this about. Are you a Princess Bride? Like, is that like a?
Okay. Princess Bride is a great movie.
Yes.
I'm not a fan.
Mm-hmm.
I came to Princess Bride very late in life.
Oh, okay.
First time I saw Princess Bride was I kid you not, maybe 2 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago.
What?
I
really?
Never saw it as a child. Yeah. I mean, so I am not the biggest fan. That doesn't mean I don't like it, but. I didn't grow up with it, so it's not as nostalgic to me. But it is a great film and one of the greatest scripts written of all time. And I love Andre the Giant. So yeah. Okay, I had seen a lot of Andre the Giant clips from that film.
Yes.
But he's great in Princess Bride. He's in a film that you and I both love as a voice, a goofy movie. He's the voice of the principal.
And he's a teacher in Clueless, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he's in Clueless.
I was about to say. And then I think he's in...
Great character actor.
Recent years been on New Girl as the... the principal for... No, wait. No, that's... Right. No, I'm sorry. That's... No, he was on it, but he... No, but the principal is Booger from Revenge...
Oh, yeah, yeah, no, 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 no. Yeah, no, but he's been on New Girl, I feel like. Whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Whatever. It doesn't matter.
He's in so much stuff. This is, like, his least character I've ever seen, if that makes sense.
But he fits, like, kind of well in that world.
He would be in that world, correct. Yeah. So, the Fugue is the name of their group.
Yeah, do we know what that...
I looked it up and it's like a musical term, but we're not here pretending that we're like, know anything about this, like, you know, quartet music and stuff.
No, I mean, I know a little bit about music, but I know nothing of like the, yeah.
It kind of sounds like the Fugees. Another quartet, in a sense.
Yeah.
But in a very different style of music. But equally as influential, I'm sure, in this theoretical universe.
Of course. Come on. Very.
So, I mean, let's talk mainly about Hoffman, but mm-hmm. What kind of, I guess, relationships do you want to talk about in this film? I mean, so Hoffman, I can't believe we briefly mentioned this, but how Catherine Keener and Philip Seymour Hoffman are in a film together again.
Well, yeah, so they were in, again, one of my favorite movies to try to say, Synecdoche, New York. There we go. And then also Capote. Yes.
Capote, yeah. And they are friends. They've talked about being friends. They've, like, again, been in films before. They seem of, like, a similar ilk.
I always, like, I do find, like, when I just, like, say to someone, like, oh, watch Synecdoche, New York. Nope. See, I'm, like, even right now, it's just, like, Brian can testify. I am not good on camera. And I'm not good in front of like a crowd on the spotlight.
I mean, I'm not
like.
And it's very ironic because you call yourself the Ham, El Hamon.
Yeah, just like a regular.
Get the stage fright. Get the old.
the jitters.
The old jitters. The jitters. You just gotta concentrate.
Kyle,
forget about it. The audience isn't there. All right, enough walking. So, Hoffman and Keener are a couple here.
Yes, they have been married for almost 25 years, it seems like, but they... No, I guess no. Their daughter's supposed to be... I think they've been married for like 22 years or something like that, 23 years.
She's in college,
yeah.
So probably even less, but... They've been in the quartet for 25 years.
Yes.
It seems
like... And he fell in love with her right away. That's, like, the big thing. He was just, like... There's a great little, like, documentary that they're watching of themselves. Like, I don't know how many years it's... What that anniversary... It feels like that was covering, like...
Maybe the 20th or something.
Maybe,
probably. Because their hair looks different and stuff in it, which is great.
And, yeah, so it's just, like, with Catherine Keener... Or, I'm sorry, with Jules, he just saw her right away. Because he was the last one, because he was the youngest at Juilliard, right? And
he was a freshman at Juilliard when they were...
when Daniel and Jules...
They might have been even seniors.
Yeah. So just like he saw her and just, you know...
fell in love.
Oh, wait. For our podcast audience. I'm sorry for the audio. I just did a heart
Kyle's
flutter.
Kyle's heart was fluttering.
Yeah. In Synecdoche, New York. Yes!
He got it. He got it. So, what did you think of, I guess, Hoffman's relationship with... This is an easy movie because there's like all these characters we can go through. Uh-huh. Let's go one by one. What do you think of Hoffman's relationship with Catherine Keener?
Well, I mean, so they've been married for, we'll say, plus 20... We'll say 20 years, whatever.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. They've known one another for 25. It doesn't, like, the introduction to them, what he comes up, he's, like, made her coffee, and he kind of, I think, wants, like, a little, morning sex, maybe, mm-hmm. or something like that. And she's very cold and says, like, I'm not in the mood. Whatever, someone doesn't have to be in the mood, but that's just, like, the initial, you know, glimpse into their relationship. And then you do get, I thought maybe she and Daniel were having something.
Or had something. Because even the daughter insinuated it.
Yes, exactly. Alexandra insinuates something or whatever, but they have like a little, they've been meeting on this bridge. Is there a name to that bridge? It's in Central Park.
It's one of the many beautiful bridges.
Beautiful
in Central Park.
Yeah. And so that just, the point being, just from the beginning, we're led to believe that Robert and Jules aren't exactly, like, their relationship's not in a great state. Sorry if you hear anything in the background. That's my roommate. We're moving out of this apartment, and he's cleaning. So there's that. And so, anyway, that's Robert's relationship with Jules. And then Robert and Daniel, very competitive. And Robert is just very upset for the past 25 years. He's been playing second violin. He thinks he has...
Oh, yeah. No, but I wanted to touch base. Robert is... What's his name?
Robert is Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Okay, so I'm getting there.
Daniel. Is...
And we'll jump to him in a second, but more on Catherine Keener and him. So basically, it's even said in this that there's that great scene, right, where they're purchasing the violin.
Yes.
First of all, awesome. I remember learning about, like...
Again, just a cool thing to show of that
yeah,
world.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's a glimpse into this world that you don't feel like... too unattached from, but I remember learning about this like years ago and be like, oh my god, I never thought about how like these great musicians, they play with instruments from like the 1700s, 1800s,
yeah,
1800s, and it's like,
yeah, this was shot at Sotheby's auction house, and that was at the actual, there's
oh,
like,
cool.
The Sotheby's auctioneer is like a very famous auctioneer, and that was him in the movie.
Yeah, okay. So like seeing that world, so they're bidding on a violin.
Beautiful violin.
It's just amazing to me that they use literally, like, historical art pieces as their instruments. You don't make, like, a new violin or make a new cello.
No, it'd be almost like if now, I don't, Jack White was playing with B.B. King's guitar, right? I don't know.
Yeah, stuff like that.
Like something got, like, carried over,
but even more.
Well, yeah, much. But I mean, we're talking.
It's about it's crazy because, like, I guess, like all, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, classical musicians out there. Mm-hmm. It's like all the good instruments have already been, like, made hundreds of years ago. There's like a finite number of them.
Well, he made, but then Daniel makes Alexandra.
He makes the string,
bows. He bought that one.
He bought that literal one. Yeah. And we'll get into that because I want to get into their relationship.
I love her so much. So much.
Okay.
Those eyes.
So
she had a cool apartment, too.
Yeah. I mean, so I was saying, though, that...
it's a good New York movie.
It is a good New York movie. Hoffman and Keener. What's her character? Oh, Jules.
Jules.
So Jules and Robert have this...
This is a late quartet.
Yes. Okay. Have a great conversation.
Uh-huh.
Because...
Oh, the behind before...
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, at this point...
Yeah, yeah, we'll get into the little details here. There was an affair.
With a very beautiful... She's supposed to be a Spaniard?
Right? Or something. I don't know.
I think
but she's an Israeli actress. Yes. I didn't write down her name. But
yeah, I wrote it down.
She's pretty good. Yeah. Basically, Robert goes jogging.
Some boobs.
Robert goes jogging in the park. I mean, let's, you know what? This is a good place to jump off on, actually.
Yeah, I think this would be a nice first clip to play. What, Liraj Chahari?
Okay.
Chahari. Yeah. I thought she was possibly, that sounded like Indian to me.
Mm.
Yeah.
I love the Bartok Quartet you recommended. The fifth? Explosive.
Hold on a second. You liked it?
Yeah. I could choreograph a piece to it.
The next step is the Shostakovich cycle. You up for it?
Yeah.
It's all on here. Listen to it while you run.
What are you playing on this one?
Second violin. Always, that's my part.
Always?
Yeah. Well, without me, they'd be a lonely, frustrated trio. Seriously, the second and first violin aren't hierarchical. They're just different roles.
Different how?
Well, sometimes I get the melody, sometimes the bass line. I connect the first violin, which tends to be the soloist part, with the viola and cello, which just flow right underneath the surface. Simply put, I pull it all together. That's my job.
Sounds important, still. Don't you have the urge to play the solo part once in a while?
Yeah, of course.
But so Robert goes jogging in the park, and he goes jogging with this woman, and you could tell right off the bat there's like some sexual tension. She asks him about...
Yeah, just like what's new, and he's saying that he's going to be playing second again. Yeah, they're going to be starting their 25th anniversary, and it's going to be like a tour. It's not just...
Yeah, they usually tour, because it's mentioned...
Tour for like 7 months at a time, just like around the world. Like, I mean,
yeah, because he's saying like Prague and stuff.
Yeah, we are not men with the money to go to a beautiful, like symphony.
I mean, we could go to one.
I know, but this I think like the 25th anniversary of the Fugue would probably be like up there.
Yeah,
know,
okay, probably. Yes,
that's what I'm saying.
So she kind of plays like a character who ignites his jealous side.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, second violin is not supposed to be like an offensive thing, but obviously, it's called first violin for a reason. Like, that's like the lead violin.
Yeah.
And
he sets the tone, you know, that kind of. Almost the leader, the captain of the group.
So, when all this is going down, when Christopher Walken's character is. He's saying he needs to retire, and the 25th anniversary, the first show of the 25th anniversary tour is going to be his last because he has Parkinson's, which we'll get into as well. So there's Hoffman's kind of thinking, or his character Robert is thinking, like, how can we shake this up?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you could tell he's an ambitious guy, but he's never really pushed. He sees his opening, and he asks if he could be alternate between first and second violin, and he's shot down right away. And the person who
he doesn't even want to be, first, the only first violin.
Yeah, he just wants
like,
to
oh,
crack
this
in,
performance.
Yeah. And it's shot down.
Yeah.
But the person you would expect, I guess, to be your most supportive backer would be your wife.
Your wife and one of the members of the quartet.
And she's not for it either.
Yeah, her and Jules and Daniel are like the conservatives of the group.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our main man even jokes about it one time, saying that they're, you know, the conservatives versus the liberals, and that, you know, because Christopher Walken, Peter says, you know, like, that sounds fun.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, because his big change is that he wants to play one song without looking at the notes.
Looking at the notes, yeah. Because Daniel
it seems
has
like
crazy notes. All
that's something that does seem like in that, like, stuck-up world that would be, like, a gimmick. Like, we would never, if we went to this show, we would never notice if they didn't look at their notes and play that.
Yeah, but
you know,
to them, that's like a, yeah.
You know, it's like,
yeah, well, Peter, they all love the music. Like, I mean, I think they're all passionate in their own way.
Mm-hmm.
But Peter is like a nerd about it. I'm sorry, not Peter. Daniel's a nerd about it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
While Robert is like, I don't know.
I get it. I get where Robert's coming from. He's stuck. He feels stuck. He feels stagnant. To him, they play the same things over and over. And yes, it's popular. But
yeah.
He'd almost rather do worse and try new things then just always be at the top of
I mean,
that.
And I'm on the same page. There's 25 years playing together.
Me too.
And the big thing about this piece is that you play, I forget how many, again,
It's a Beethoven piece, Beethoven something 151.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
150, is that like, isn't that a drink?
Bacardi 151. Yeah.
They stopped making it.
So normally there's four...
Parts
of it.
We'll just call parts. Sorry, but it's been a while. Since
movements. Yeah. Normally, there's four movements. In this one, there's seven movements, and they all have to be played in a row.
In a row. That's crazy.
You can't stop.
Yeah.
So, Robert. I keep forgetting his name.
Phil Seroff.
Yeah, Robert. Like, he sees this opportunity to change things up a bit.
Yeah.
He shot down.
Which would be cool for, again, the 25th anniversary. I don't know. Like,
he gets upset one night, kind of gets drunk, and sleeps with Pilar.
He goes to see her dancing amazing flamenco.
Yeah, she's a flamenco dancer.
In Espanol. You're going to Spain. You're in Spain right now.
yes, let's share my travel plans with everyone.
Oh, my God. He's on...
In Spain when this episode airs.
No, you're right before Spain.
I am here, but I will be traveling in the next couple of weeks, so the illusion of these episodes being live will be kind of broken. But except today, because this one, if you're on Facebook, is actually live.
Adios, amigo. Have some jamón for me, for the...
I will have some jamón for the jamón.
Jamón ibérico.
So, I just wanted to set up this violin purchase scene. Basically, she catches him, Catherine Keener.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think he left the violin at her place or something, and she starts she follows him for a little bit, and I believe it's in the Time Warner Center in Columbus Circle. They're he's meeting Pilar, and she...
So uncomfortable.
And she just catches him in the act.
So uncomfortable.
And he apologizes, and you could tell he feels bad, because he was there not to, continue it. He was there to break it off.
Yeah, you could... Yeah, he's in... Yeah. Yeah.
She doesn't have it, basically, and she kicks him out of the house, and he ends up, I guess... We don't see where he lives, do we?
Because then that's another scene I would love to talk about. Daniel visits.
Oh yeah. Quite.
But it's
it's a very bland, like, just moved apartment.
Yeah, you can't tell. It means nothing.
So she...
It's this apartment.
She kicks him out, but they're like, the group still lives on because they're professionals.
Yeah.
So
and Christopher Walken doesn't know.
Yeah. They're keeping it from him. They keep a couple secrets from him until that big...
people. I think the people that know the most secrets, I guess, are Jules and Daniel. Because Robert even finds out.
Robert finds out. I want to talk about that scene, too. So, they have that great scene where they buy that instrument, because they're still... And it looks like they're buying it together as well.
Well, yeah, I mean,
they
care about their... They've obviously done very well. That's a given. And then they are parents to their daughter, Alexandra, and Alexandra is studying violin via...
So you think they're buying it for the daughter? Is it the same?
Yeah, that's what they're looking
at.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I thought so. I just wanted to confirm that with you.
And so, you know, she's taking a class at, I'm assuming, Juilliard with...
Yeah,
Peter.
I believe she's in Juilliard.
Yeah.
Peter, and then... Yeah.
And then she's taking private lessons with Daniel.
Yeah. So
private lessons.
Of course, if you ever work with somebody and you're dating them, which I've never done, but I've seen it, and then you break up and you're still having to do business things, there's, of course, the personal stuff's going to bleed into it.
Yeah, but I mean, it's also, this is, while it's horrible and he cheated on her after, again, 20-plus years, I'm assuming, of marriage and knowing her for 25, it's, you know, it's different than, obviously, dating with someone for a little while and then being at work.
Of course,
so it's just on top of that, and they are incredible professionals in their, you know, quartet that they continue practicing for.
Yeah, and
while Peter's also
for this
medication.
For this last performance as well. But the conversation they have is so oh my God, because it's essentially it's you never really loved me. You were only with me because you were only with me because of the child.
Yeah, I mean, it's just... I'm sorry, I just want to find it exactly.
Both of us knew going in it wasn't going to be easy. that was exciting back then, but we've had our ups and downs. But on a whole, I think our marriage is a good one. So I can't believe that one truly regrettable night's going to ruin all that. See, I've loved you madly since the moment I met you. But I've always feared deep down that you felt like you were forced into it. That you wouldn't have married me if you didn't get pregnant. Because in so many ways, you haven't really been there. not completely. And I've learned to live with that, you know, expecting one day that you'll, you know, finally want to be closer to me. I did away with my dreams of composing and playing other forms of music, and I did it gladly, without reservation, for us to be together, to play, to have a child. Do you really love me? Or am I just convenient?
Like you said, were you ever in love with me? I love what he says to the guy, because then someone else buys the violin at the auction. He's like, congratulations, you just bought a quality violin from someone, you know.
Because at that point, we're assumed that it, and we'll get into it, but we're assumed that it's somebody, just like maybe for something in their home.
Yeah.
You know, like a rare artifact kind of thing.
Yeah, the bidding starts for this violin at $15,000, and it goes up and sells for $25,000. I think that's what it started at.
Yeah. Crazy. I would be like me holding it, like breaking it, you know, like,
yeah.
You dropped that thing.
There was something recently in social media, I think she was an Asian American, like, musician student or something like that, had some beautiful, like, I think it was a cello, and she got it put on the plane, like, but it, like, it was wrapped up perfectly and everything. They said that it was okay, and then it comes around on the thing, it's completely crushed.
Oh.
And it was this thing that was like from like the 1700s.
Wow, that's that's unfortunate. Yeah, so we're basically, I want to set up like the big ending here. So we're basically there with this relationship, correct?
Mm-hmm.
It's fallen apart, but they're still gonna play. Now I kind of want to get into it. It's not a Hoffman relationship, mm-hmm. but the relationship between the daughter and... Why do I keep forgetting his name?
Daniel.
Yeah, Daniel.
Yeah. He started making me question it.
And the daughter's name is?
Alexandra.
Daniel and Alexandra. So as you mentioned, Daniel, whose first violin, a meticulous, meticulous performer.
And like, he's like intimidating.
Intimidating, you know? Yeah. He is so, like, he's largely considered the master in his field. I almost found
he's a perfectionist.
I almost found it kind of not insulting, but like when Christopher Walken's character is like, oh, why don't you teach her, when her father is also a violin player.
No, but also, I mean, but Robert pushes for it too.
Yeah, no, when I first...
Robert doesn't deny, like, Daniel's talent.
I know, but when they first announced it, I'm like, oh my god, but then when I saw how, like, I'm like, oh, okay, so it's not that big of a deal. So he's, like, really teaching her how to be passionate about it, how to be meticulous and passionate about it. He has her play the same note, like, 3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
And he's like, and he says, like,
stop.
Yeah, stop. Read Beethoven's autobiography.
Yeah, like four books of his.
And you could tell that they have like an attraction to each other despite like the age difference.
Yeah, well, at first, it seems like she does more at first, and he's just kind of calling her out on being like, you just care more about like.
Even there, though, I felt it. Like, I felt like, okay, what's going to happen here? This is going to. Eventually, where they go to that horse farm to get, like...
Just the kiss in the stables. Yeah, to get horse hairs.
Horse hairs, and that's... They need that for the strings or the bow? Or? For the bow, okay. Yeah. So, they have a weird relationship.
Yeah, I mean, it starts with she kisses him at the stables, and he kind of stops.
Stops, because, I mean, that's his colleague's daughter, and he's her teacher.
Teacher, and, I mean, yeah, and he's, you know, gotta be... You know, he's 20 plus years older than her, so.
But I don't know. Okay, so they end up dating, like seriously dating. Like, there's that whole apartment scene.
Yeah, well, where Jules, Alexandra's mother, is coming over.
Yeah, yeah, and that's weird because she catches him. But so she comes up, they sleep with each other. One of two sex scenes again. So Pilar, like, there's two like sex scenes we see, right?
We don't see actually like Alexandra's like sex scene. See him laying in bed.
No, she's on top of him. He's on top of her.
We don't see anything though, really.
Well, it's not porn. We don't see anything anywhere.
No, but Pilar's is much more graphic.
Okay, fair. Another Hoffman sex scene.
I know, boy.
Before
I wanted to quote Silicon Valley season 2 right then, but I'll keep it to
before we did this podcast, would you have ever guessed that there was this many Philip Seymour Hoffman sex scenes?
I just, even though I had, like, I guess seen a lot of this being one I didn't see, but, like...
No way.
I just, when I didn't, I don't think, I didn't think of him, like, that way. As,
no, no, of course
the only
not.
One I definitely remembered was, just because it's intense, is the Before the Devil Knows You.
Okay.
This is very...
I hear you. So, anyway, so they have sex. I mean, Daniel...
Yeah.
And Alexandra.
And the first time is she thinks it's her mom, and she opens up the door.
Yeah.
And it's him at the
and, like,
door.
As you mentioned, her mom comes up, and he escapes through the fire escape. Mm-hmm. But she tells her mom right away. And it's almost like...
Well, she wouldn't have, but she sees his car.
She sees his car, but she also doesn't try to hide it. And she's pretty... not proud, but she has this feeling of almost... my theory on it is that she was kind of more doing it to get back at her mom.
That... she is very... like a better word, like outspoken/defiant, but we learned that this kind of comes from a place of resentment because since she says you weren't a good mother,
It
gets to a point that is rough. She says this one, and Catherine Keener in like an amazing just like acting moment, the way she delivers like, why are you being so cruel? Or you are so cruel. I forget exactly how she says it, but because Alexandra says to her, if I was in your shoes, I would have gotten an abortion, because the whole thing is she, you know, got pregnant before she and Robert were married, and she's
and
this talented musician.
And they still went on the long tours.
Still went on long tours.
Like, and raised by nannies and stuff.
So, it's just a very...
So, I think a lot of that inspired her to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if she was necessarily in love, like she said.
Yeah.
I think she was, like, a younger person, and she was a little confused. But what's his name? Like, Daniel is actually in love.
Yeah, and he's never been, like, he's like, I've, I can't do a, is he supposed to be Israeli in the movie?
Well, they say he's foreign, they say he moved to that country, so I'm
and
not
even,
sure.
And our main man does, like, in that documentary, does an impression of him.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
But yeah, so it just, he's like, I've never been in a relationship before, and I've never loved someone like this before, and I'm not gonna let the, or he, maybe he's never been in a relationship, and he's not going to let someone that he loves go this time. So it seems like he's always just put the career, whether he needed to or not, his mind had to. He's made the decision that, like, the music comes first,
that lifestyle, the fugue comes first.
Yeah.
But not, like, the friendship of the fugue, the music of the fugue comes first.
You know, his absolute, like, just adoring, just like Beethoven, like there's just like trying. I mean, and again, they're all passionate people, but they're just like, it's very, they're all from like a different spectrum of like passion.
And he, what's not weird, but kind of interesting, is the fact that, like, he's willing to give up the fugue for this girl.
Mm.
You know? Like, he's willing to just. And he mentions, let's start our own band, essentially.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, wow. So, like, it is very important. And so back to Hoffman for a bit. They, like you mentioned, they have a very interesting relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just not going to happen the way where he's not, no matter what, going to let Hoffman be first violin. And you brought it up before. They Daniel and Robert have a great conversation.
Yes.
Where Daniel comes to Robert's apartment, and Robert, he seems drunk. He's got, like, a vodka bottle there. Daniel?
It was...
Is drunk? Someone brings a vodka bottle.
No, Robert is there drinking... I think it was a scotch or a whiskey.
Okay, whatever. It's a clear bottle.
Yeah.
Oh, that was all you were... Okay. No, so they have this great, like, drunk...
It's bothering me that I don't remember what it was, because I remember being like, oh, what's that? Oh, okay.
They have this great conversation, though. It just, like, and it just shows, like, how they feel about each other, but
yeah, just the... Daniel's positive. I mean, Robert's been having, like, a lot of... It's like, this is, like, his moment of, like, resentment, like...
Yeah.
Come, you know.
And this is where we see a lot of those thoughts that we talked about come out again, like... Like, this is... He essentially is like, this is your band, you know? Like, this is not a quartet. This is, like... Robert is telling Daniel, like, you've... Essentially, that he's kind of been, like, a dictator of how everything's been going.
Yeah, that's no longer... It's like, he is in charge of three people. It's not... Yeah. It's totally not, like... They might be four people... They're only four people playing. It's not, the, like, teamwork anymore. It's just, yeah.
I mean, I feel like that's gonna naturally happen in any band. Like, the Beatles. I guess the most famous, like... quartet,
sure.
In popular music, People said that about Paul McCartney, you know, that he was pulling too many of the strings, or and there was a lot of resentment there. And you get that here, for sure.
Mm-hmm. You know, practicing obsessively doesn't make your playing perfect. It actually sucks the life right out of it. It's rigid and monotonous and self-loving and safe.
Jesus, Robert, would you stop being so childish? Please, yeah, I know it's a challenging
thing
for
you.
It's challenging for
group
all of us.
Is going down this path that you have us on.
I understand that.
The way you play is the way the quartet plays, and it's the same thing over and over and over and over. I am in my 40s. We've been playing since we were in our early 20s. That is where you've taken this group.
But if we keep it together, now we have Nina.
That is where we have taken this group. That is where we have let you take this group. I have let you do that. A disservice.
You're not even willing to play Beethoven without your notes. Unleash your passion. Man,
my passion.
Unleash your passion. What are you afraid of? You have the three of us to cover your ass. Unleash your passion.
Just to touch on the walk-in thing, because I think we need to address it.
But like, I did write down, I love how he says... Daniel says, like, what were you thinking? Because he really goes there kind of to confront him about, like, his thing is Robert cheating on Jules, and that I just love Robert getting into, and he's like, unleash your passion, which is kind of ends up doing by sleeping with Robert's daughter, Alexandra.
Yeah.
So that was the passion that I guess he...
So there's another reading of this film that we're definitely not going to get, and we're not addressing a lot because we don't know. So that Beethoven piece that they're playing, apparently the film's script is supposed to mimic that, or some people say that.
In its, like, pace.
Pace and seven like... parts, and, okay. like...
Hmm.
You and I are not going to get that.
I'm going to listen to Dark Side of the Moon with the Wizard of Oz.
Or something along those lines. Yeah, you and I are not going to get that.
Yeah.
But that, I mean, these beats, I if that's true, I can get sort of
the
where...
measures.
Yes. I can get sort of where it's coming from. So I just want to touch on the walk-in thing. You mentioned, like, he should have freaking been nominated for an Oscar for this.
Wow!
I have people in my family who have suffered from Parkinson's, and it is, like, it's a very debilitating thing. Mm-hmm. And this is a man... we all make our living with our hands. I hate when people say that. Most of us do, you know?
Yeah, but...
I hate when my hands.
It's his work, but it's his passion. It's all... I mean, he has... Jules and Robert and Daniel.
Jules, we should mention, Jules is like a daughter to him. Like,
yeah.
Like her parents died and they essentially...
And Walken's wife had just died. He is coming back.
I'm sorry, what's his character name? Because I
Peter.
Feel... Peter. Okay,
Peter
yeah,
Mitchell.
Peter Mitchell.
Peter Luger.
Okay. Peter Mitchell. Yeah, Peter's wife, like as you mentioned, just died.
Yes, Miriam.
Miriam.
And so he was... in, like, a little sabbatical hiatus, whatever you want to call it, and they had this other cellist,
Nina Lee.
Yeah, Nina
Her name
Lee.
Is Nina Lee. And
that's also who he...
So Nina Lee is actually a musician.
And you know how I could tell? Is because when she comes on stage and is playing, and the veracity...
Yeah.
Of her face. Like, that's the whole thing. You watch, like the few, like, string ensembles, like, the real true musicians, when they're getting into that music, like, just the...
Yeah.
You know, like...
They get into it. And she's actually in the group that plays the music. The real quartet that played the music for this quartet. Yes.
That they use in this movie.
Yes.
Okay.
So she is, she's like temporary replacement. She's the one they're trying to recruit to be Peter's replacement.
Yes. Yeah. And that's Peter's recommendation. Daniel won't have it at first, but then, like, and I mean, also, Jules says almost from once finding that out, like, she. is thinking about just leaving in general before even anything with Robert and everything like
yeah.
that. She just thinks, I mean, and again, I mean, 25 years, pretty good run for their quartet. They could keep playing else, you know, with other people, solo, join an orchestra. Honestly, that could
do
be like
thing,
a good,
or retire.
That would be like
teach.
A good thing for Robert, though. Like Robert could easily become first string or first violin.
Yeah, and we won't get into it yet. We will, but we don't know what happens after this concert.
No.
So it all builds to this moment, like, because they don't get a lot of practice before this performance.
No.
It's just a couple times of practice, and it's mostly because Peter's hands. Mm-hmm. He's waiting for the medication to kick in, and he just can't, like, play straight. So they have this, I guess it would be their, I don't know if they have a full practice before this, or we see a full practice before
this. No, but it comes to... Yes, yeah, so, a cataclysm of...
yeah, so there's this huge dramatic scene where they're practicing, and there's, like, sniping at each other, and it's revealed... Cause, like you said, Catherine Keener knows about the affair with the daughter. It's not really an affair, I guess, but, you know, the...
Peter knows the least.
Peter knows the least.
Then Robert, and then, I guess, Jules and Daniel know the most. Yeah.
They know about both things.
Yes.
And then Peter finds out that...
Well, he's like, what's going on?
Yeah. Peter finds out about the sex with the daughter and also the affair of Robert.
Yeah. The affair and then, yeah, the daughter and Robert finds out at the same time, and Robert just, like, excuse, like, I thought he was going to start, like, weeping, but he, like, puts down his violin and just goes up and fucking punches Daniel.
Robert, yeah.
Yeah.
And Peter, like, Peter's hurt, like a father almost would be hurt of, like, a family
so
fighting.
So, like, ashamed,
that.
Like, this won't, not this in my house, like, I'm going to go upstairs when I come back down, I don't want anyone here. Just very, like your mentor, again, that's the interesting, like, you know, our main man plays a lot of great mentors, like, this is, like, Walken's the mentor in this movie, and it's, and he does, he's such a fantastic, people, you know,
watch this movie, watch
Walken.
So you know why it's called The Late Quartet?
Because of T.S. Eliot's poem of...
It was called that?
Yeah.
Okay, that, yes, but there's a couple reasons, it's like a multi-meaning thing. That Beethoven piece they're playing is it's considered one of his late quartets, as he had written it
later
in his career. Yeah. It's also the late of the career and their performances, you know. Oh. Like, it's their potentially last performance.
Yes.
And I don't know, maybe they're late to get to the stage, I'm not sure.
I don't know, yeah, we were late to this podcast, but, but he said, yeah, brief, about a couple minutes, but yeah, in the beginning, Walken is talking to his class, and he was reading T.S. Eliot about Beethoven's Late Quartet. So it's Beethoven. So it's a poem. T.S. Eliot talking about Beethoven.
Yeah. Okay. I don't think it's called a late quartet, though.
No, not T. Yeah.
So that's why I was confused. Yeah, but it's about that. Yes.
Yeah.
So basically, Peter, as like the father and the mentor, gets the band back together.
I'm sorry. I thought this movie was going to go in such a horrible direction. I love this movie. Love it.
Wow.
But there's that moment that he goes on top of the roof. I'm like, no.
Who?
Peter.
Oh, no, I didn't think that.
He goes to the edge. He's looking down. He has
just
Parkinson's.
Oh, like he would fall?
No, that he's... That I was thinking he was just like... I can't... Like, my... Like, his wife has passed away. He has Parkinson's. He's gonna lose, like, his passion.
Okay.
And now his, like, you know, adoptive musical family. Like... You can't tell me, like, another movie hasn't gone that direction with someone like...
True. I was just more hopeful.
Yes. But, no, but... So, a movie that I was
also
really
enjoying... Also, the opening scene is clearly, like, the closing scene.
That's what... Yeah, all of a sudden I went, like, oh, that is... Because I realized that because PSH shaves his...
Yeah. Okay.
I realized that. No, but I was thinking...
No, I hear you. I hear you. Okay. So, that doesn't happen, though. He gets the band back together by having kind of... couple conversations here or there, and we have our performance. But before the performance, there's that great teaching scene from Peter. Do you remember that?
Yeah, that
where he's telling the story of meeting that renowned musician, and he says the whole thing where, like, first time he met him, he played like crap, and the second time he met him, he also played like crap, and then he saw him again years later, and he's like, "I'm sorry for playing like crap," and the musician got upset, and he was like, It's a great story. Watch that clip if you can. But where he's like, what does he say? He's like, oh, did you do this? Did you do that? And like actually how that great musician took things from him.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
Hey, we learned it in The Last Jedi, too. It's just like their failures are the greatest, like, lessons.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, if we want to, like, dumb it down.
Story is all this time, yeah.
Like, it's just like silver lining thing, you know? Like, in every bad, there's good.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, it almost sets a hopeful tone for this ending. And then the ending, there's the stage.
What a beautiful, like,
beautiful
ending and just, like, exit for the character of Peter.
I read both Hoffman and Walken said they enjoyed shooting this scene so much because there was actually a crowd there. And as performers, it's almost like a stage thing. You know? And while they weren't like necessarily playing the music and took 2 days to shoot, they're still performing for a crowd.
Do you know what venue that is?
That I looked it up. That's actually, and there's no way of us knowing this, it was actually in the Metropolitan Museum of Art.
Oh, okay.
They have, and I didn't know this, they have a theater in there.
I thought it was like Lincoln Center, I don't know.
I thought it was Lincoln Center too. And that's why I wanted to look up like what exact theater, but it was in Metropolitan Museum of Art. You know, there's that empty stage, they just walk in, and they're all...
At first, it's just like, realizing, oh, the beginning mm-hmm. is the ending or whatever.
Which maybe they shouldn't have done.
No, they should. No, I personally don't think they should have.
Yeah. You know, that might have made it create a little bit more suspense. But it was still suspenseful. Mm-hmm. You don't know if they were just going to sit down and someone walk out or something.
Yeah.
Or just, it would just be Nina come on and not walk in. But walking comes on.
Yeah.
They all come on. They all start playing, and they're playing good, and it sounds awesome. And you can tell that people are really into it.
I'm very intrigued. I don't know if this is Hoff fans. If one of you like knows the world of you know, like performing with strings and stuff like that, I've been to shows that as a cellist, he uses like a piano bench, and the rest of them have chairs. Now I know, like, you know, that's much, you know, you're using your neck, so maybe you want to like lean back a little bit holding it, and you know, cellist, you're like, you don't maybe need the back support because you're like going in. I don't know, but I just found that very interesting. That as a cellist,
he had
a separate seat.
Well, you could talk about that on your chair podcast.
On my chair podcast, I'll talk about that scene from Knocked Up when one of our favorite people of all time,
Paul Rudd.
Thank you, Paul Rudd. Is just like, there's 5 chairs in here. This is way too many chairs. One man's job is to pick out all these chairs. Sorry, oh, side.
I thought you were going to talk about...
The tall one's gawking at me, the short one's being very droll.
I thought you were talking about 40-year-old virgin when they're in those, like, one of two chairs and one of them's, like, the speaker chair. One's a speaker chair and one of them's, like, an ab, like, workout chair. Anyway, we're actually having a podcast about chairs now, which is a terrible move on our part. So they have this performance, and I don't know, more than midway through, but not exactly. I think they have only one or two movements left.
Yeah.
Walken just can't do it anymore.
He can't keep up with the tempo.
But it seems like it was planned, like...
She was a backup battery. Nina is there in stage right. I know which stage is what side.
And he says this great, so subtle, so understated, simple speech, but it's so beautiful.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Just the crowd that he's like. And
it's
he explains.
My privilege.
He's like, thank you. He doesn't mention I have Parkinson's, I have to quit, or anything like that. But he says, thank you so much. I can no longer keep up. Nina is a great musician. Yeah. She's coming in to replace me. Thank you. And it's a beautiful moment because you see the emotion in the other actors' faces.
It's just, I'm sorry, what's the actor from Princess Bride?
Wallace Shawn.
Yeah, just like
he's in the audience.
Yeah, he's in the audience. And then Peter goes and he sits with Alexandra. It looks almost more all the way in the back or maybe in the balcony a little bit.
Peter sits with Alexandra. But if you notice,
like holds her hand.
If you notice, Robert and Juliet have a little, like, words on the stage while this happens. And he really comforts Juliet. Because Juliet, I feel like, is...
They seem like to have, like, a nice moment.
Juliet, I feel like, is the one who's hurt the most by Peter leaving. For sure. Like, because that was, like, a surrogate father for her. And they have, like, a very comforting moment that you're hopeful for their relationship.
I think Robert even shakes his hand, but he doesn't... I don't think he shakes Daniel's hand. Peter, that is, I think.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
And
he's very, like, I mean, in the end, I guess, I mean, Robert did, you know, it was the one-time cheating, horrible thing, but there was some problems going on in their marriage, like, Daniel, definitely, that's the most, I'm sorry, you know, that's, it's your, it's your band members.
We totally skipped this just for context.
Alexandra ended things.
Yes. Peter asks Daniel to end things. He says no, and he's going to quit the band. And Alexandra ends things. And again, for a couple reasons. One, I don't really believe 100% that she loved him like that.
Yeah, I think, you know, she's just
a young person, you know.
Yeah, just like fell in love with the passion and just like this. And a little bit to piss off her parents.
Yes, 100%. I mean, I think more than a little bit. But it's she loves the fugue too, because she almost breaks up with him after watching that documentary. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I'm not going to be the reason that this great thing breaks up. That's not worth it for me.
Yeah, you know, she really, as much as you'd almost think, like, I mean, she resents even more so her mom. She's always defending her dad, Robert. They seem to have a better relationship.
Yeah, for sure.
She is in love with the music, and you almost think like she would resent that world since that was the thing that kept her parents. But yeah.
Yeah. So you know, that looks like it's gonna go okay. Mm-hmm. I think that Hoffman and Keener are going to get back together, but who knows?
I don't know
if the band stays together or not. Who knows? But it's a good ending to a good film, and it ends right there.
Yeah. I like that it has, like, goes into a nice title card. It has the five main actors, like, on the screen, you know, names on the screen. It's just a very... It's a really good movie that I was... genuinely, I wasn't like surprised by it being good per se, but it was just, it's fun to watch a movie that came out a little while ago, obviously.
Yeah, for sure.
Making a podcast about it, is one of our favorite actors, and it's just an all around great movie.
Definitely. Anything else you want to mention about The Late Quartet or A Late Quartet?
No, I just, again, please watch it. Thanks for watching us on this. But you know, watch A Late Quartet. I watched on Amazon. You know, it's out there. It's easily accessible.
So what do we have next week on the podcast?
Next week we have Catching Fire, Hunger Games, right?
Hunger Games, Catching Fire.
The second installment of that series. So we
first
not,
for us.
Yes. We're not covering the first Hunger Games
because he's not in it.
So watch, you know, if you wanna, you're gonna listen to the episode.
We have a little homework for you.
Yeah, watch the first Hunger Games.
And we have a great guest from CageClub.me, Cage Club Network.
Yeah.
Wistful Thinking. Kara Gail O'Regan.
Yeah, she's one of the co-hosts. She's been on once before with us
with
for
Patch Adams.
Patch Adams. A little different this movie, Hunger Games.
Yeah, we're excited to talk about it. I've never seen any Hunger Games, so I'll catch up on my Hunger Games.
Yeah, actually, and this is two movies in a row that I...
There's a lot of later ones I hadn't seen, but I mean, Hunger Games is more like that was Catching Fire was the top movie that year, and I hadn't seen it.
Yeah. Oh.
But definitely looking forward to that. Follow us on Facebook. Well, if you're watching us, you're probably already following us on Facebook, but definitely like us, follow us on Facebook, because if you're listening to this and you haven't seen the video and you for some reason want to see what our faces look like, become our like us on Facebook, I should say, but comment. We love hearing your comments. A lot of good comments have been coming in.
Yes.
For the master, maybe we'll read some of them, because polarizing film, one of Kyle's favorites. And if you haven't heard that episode, please listen to that episode and all our other episodes. Catch up.
Yeah, and every all great. I forget. We're gonna be talking with Joey and Michael, the co-creators of Cage Club, one last time before this podcast ends, but I forget they're up to an insane amount of podcasts on the network.
Yeah, tons of podcasts on the network.
So check them all out.
Check our show out. We're on iTunes. Everything, you know, anything. If you can get a podcast, you'll find our podcast there.
Yes.
And thanks so much for listening, as always. And Kyle, do you
thanks, guys. Oh, yeah, our line. Stay uncool.
Thank you. Stay uncool. Thanks, guys.
Stay uncool. Stay uncool.
Stay in school.
Stay in school by staying uncool. Wait, no, that's not good advice.
Not good advice at all.
Sex and things, I believe in miracles.